Okay, 6 o'clock, we'll call the meeting to order. And let us roll call first.
Okay, Andy Berg.
Here.
Joseph Carnelli.
Here.
John Franco.
Here.
Boyd Frederick.
Here.
David Holman is not here. Mark Nordigan.
Here.
And Gabe Newdall.
Here.
For Youth and Governance, Catherine Bogdala.
Here.
And Elizabeth Van Kammen.
Here.
Thanks.
Okay, any series of comments? No citizen comments. And reports from the chairperson. Well, the only thing I want to say is next month we're going to miss, we're not going to have any guest speakers.
Any what?
Any guest speakers.
Oh.
Because we're going to talk about the big budget for the Corporation Council. So, and.
Is it still going to be 6?
Probably, I think so, because
I believe the intention right now is to
keep
make an appointment and have it voted on the 16th. So I think maybe, I'm sorry, the time?
The time
is
6 o'clock.
I'm sorry, I'm sorry, the
no.
We'll have to figure out whether we need an hour and a half.
Well, I think we should keep it to 6 unless something else comes up, because I was thinking about maybe talking about something else in the time anyway. And if we don't, I hate to cut it so short just before the board meeting anyway. So, is there any problems with that with anybody or?
No, keep the same time. It seems fine with
okay.
me.
Just means we get to spend more time together.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, with that.
Okay, any committee members that want to make a report?
I do. I had. Well, it wasn't my constituent, but out in the county, had asked if there can be a change in how people are notified when either a zoning change or a change of like this Highway F that's going to be changed going out in Randall. No one in the area has been notified of any of that. But they did post the notices at Randall and Twin Lakes and then in the paper. Here's the problem. Unless you're voting, unless you're going up for a building permit or you have some business to do at any municipality, you generally aren't going there just to see what's going on. And if you don't get the newspaper, you're not going to get it. Now, I understand it is up to the people to try to pull that information out. Those are kind of the way things were, because that was kind of how it is, and there's so many more communications out there available, that should there be some other way of putting that information out there? I don't know what the answer is. It's just a question they had brought up. I said I'd bring it up to this committee because I'm sure it's something that can start, but I don't know if it's just state that mandates what it is. So something maybe.
Are you speaking notification by the municipalities or by the county?
Well, this one's by the county, so.
Mm-hmm. We can look into it. I believe statutorily it's still mandated that we post stuff.
I understand. I don't think they're doing anything wrong. Just if there's a better way of doing it, that's all.
I saw it both on Facebook and Twitter.
You have to have Facebook and you have to have Twitter.
I know, but
you know, I'm just saying.
It was two other ways.
Our ages don't get into a lot of that kind of stuff, as well as older than us. You have a Twitter account? Or a Facebook account? You know.
Well, it's still on the agenda.
You're still
on the agenda, though.
I know.
On the agenda? What's on the agenda?
Like the committee agenda for zone changes?
No, I believe he's talking about.
No, that's not coming. Put it.
They can see it.
Right. Stuff is on the agenda, isn't it?
Right, but all I'm saying is there's people out there that will be affected by the Highway F, and I got notification, assuming because I'm on the county board, that if you want to have a public hearing, here's the information. None of those people got anything, but it was posted. I'm not saying the county did anything wrong, far from it. Is there a better way of informing those people? Should they have had, because there was only maybe 5-10 of them out there, that have properties that will be affected by this should have been directly sent something. I don't know. I'm just bringing up the question.
Maybe that's something that we can talk in the future.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Maybe that's a good reason to keep our meeting at 6 o'clock.
Yeah,
that's one thing we can
do. I'm just saying, that's all. It was brought up to me, and I said, well, I'll bring it up to see if there's something that we can look at in the future. That's all.
Okay. Anybody else? And communications?
None.
None? Okay, approval of August 21st minutes.
Move to approve the minutes.
Second.
Okay, moved by Mark, second by Boyd. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes. Okay, next one. Oh, I'm sorry. Thanks, Andy. You think I'm...
Aye.
Okay. Sorry about that. Thanks, Andy. Next one, discussion with Representative Samantha Kirkman, which I know she texted me. She said she might be a little... Oh, no, she's here. Okay, Sam.
I wasn't sure I got stuck in the freight train on 60th Street.
Well, thank you for coming anyway. And you were early, actually.
Yeah. Well, because I left Telemundo. I said I was changing something about a mom, but I was changing my wash to the dryer. So as soon as I put the wet clothes into the dryer, I gave myself 45 minutes to get here. And then I got stuck by freight train. So wasn't sure how 60th Street was coming in. So. Anyway, Chairman Noodle and committee members, thanks for the opportunity to be here tonight to have a conversation about what's happening in the legislature. There are several things happening, but first, I guess for the new members, folks that might not know me as well, I might as well give a little overview of who I am. And again, I'm State Representative Samantha Kirkman. I represent the 61st Assembly District, which includes primarily Western Kenosha County, excluding Wheatland, the Village of Pleasant Prairie, and half of the Village of Summers now. Over the years, my district's changed a little bit. I used to represent three counties. When I was first elected, I used to have Racine, Kenosha, and Walworth counties. So now I have the pleasure of just one county board. So, I really do appreciate the conversations I have. Several of my county supervisors pick up the phone and call me when they have an issue. And before we get started, actually, Supervisor Nordegan, your comments with regards to the notification. I was made aware of that situation because County Highway F is out in Western Kenosha County, and she called the county exec on the issue because there's a business down there that wants some utility lines moved because they're building a 125,000 square foot building across the street from where their existing buildings are. And so I wanted to have a long-term conversation with Clement, and actually, that particular notification came up today about notifying landowners who might not even live there, because a lot of County Highway F is still rural and farming, and subdivided into little roads. Again, notification is, and we have had those conversations in Madison about notification and putting them out on email and Facebook. I think that if there's a further discussion that you'd like to have with the legislators, I think that would be important because, again, people get information in so many different ways, and it isn't the traditional newspaper and or going to the town or village hall, depending, or city hall. They might not know something is happening right now. So anyway, I do appreciate that conversation. A little bit of background about what committees I served on. Right now I'm the co-chair of the Joint Audit Committee, which I've been on that committee since I was first elected. Been the co-chair on it since 2011 with Senator Coles. So that is my main committee, but the other committees I serve on are also Ways and Means, Judiciary, Children and Families, and State and Federal Relations. Children and Families is a newer committee that I've been appointed to in the last couple years. My work on foster care has been a big reason that I wanted to get onto that committee, is because a lot of people don't know this. When I was in high school, my parents actually were foster parents. And it was a much different system back then. My best friend was 17 and had some issues with her family and wound up in the foster care system. And my parents made the decision to become foster parents, and so took my best friend Tammy in. And actually, she stayed for a couple years. After I was in college, Tammy stayed with my parents. So I don't know if they were still foster parents after that. But so again, getting kids to forever homes, either being back with their biological families or with families that will love them forever, is something that, again, seeing Tammy and how it's really, over the years, impacted her, what my family has done for her. We kind of separated for ways. We didn't have Facebook and ways to communicate. And we reconnected about 7-8 years ago. And she thanks me every day for that opportunity, for that connection and that somebody that stood up for her and cared about her. So I know that I have a number of foster families here in Kenosha County that make a difference every single day, that have just, they're angels, as I call them, truly are angels. So we've done several pieces of legislation this year that have come out of actually a special committee, but then the standing committee that they came before was the Children and Families Committee. And it's a tough committee because you see the best and then you see some of the most challenging, difficult situations. And I know your Human Services department does a great job because as an arm of state government, as the county government, you guys are the first responders to a lot of those cases. So it's a big thing that really touches your heart. So children and families, very, very important. I also serve on the Judiciary Committee. I've been on that committee. I'm one of a few non-lawyers on that committee. Kind of fun to come at things from a different perspective. We have on both sides of the aisle. So currently the members are on the Democratic side are Dana Walks, Chris Taylor, and Gary Hebel. Gary's been on it for as long as I can remember. So those are the three Democratic members. Then on our side we have Jim Ott, who, you know, you might have known him from TMJ4 and his background in weather, but he's actually an attorney. So he is a strong advocate for upgrading and changing our drunk driving laws, which over the years there's nobody been stronger and more, along with Senator Darling on the other side, as an advocate to try to change those laws. And so I've co-sponsored a number of his pieces of legislation just because of his advocacy. And then also, you know, a couple other attorneys, Cody Horlacher and Ron Tesler on those committees. And then there's been sporadic few non-attorneys like me on that. But definitely very interesting dealing with more of the courts, the inner workings of the courts, what goes on in a day-to-day operation, more that criminal justice side, but not necessarily punishment bills, more on the operations of the courts and such. So very interesting committee. State and federal relations hasn't met as much as my other committees. Again, that's that inner workings between the federal government and the state government. Kind of like here is the state government, county government. Gotten to talk about, you know, different things where the federal government impacts state government. Kind of like when you talk about, you know, government coming down or state government coming down and governor, you know, county government or local government. Same thing with federal government coming down and putting things on the state government. So that, you know, is more dealing with federalist type of issues. Ways and Means deals with tax policy. Lots of different tax policies, but specifically a lot of dealing with TIF districts. It's something I know a lot about. I'm one of a few legislators that dives into that type of tax policy because over the years, for Kenosha specifically, and a little bit for Pleasant Prairie and then Summers now, we've done specific bills to help out. Summers most recently, when they were a town, we gave them the ability to actually have TIF districts before they were a village. So that was something that we've done, specifically working with in a bipartisan way with Representative Barca and I don't know if Representative Onstead was there when that bill passed, but definitely Senator Wirch. So, again, tax policy is, you know, not the most glamorous thing, but it impacts pretty much every single one of our constituents in different ways. And then then the bigger discussion is audit. Fraud and waste is something that I've looked through for years. And I just went back and jotted down just a few of the audits we've done this last two-year cycle. The big ones were the DOT audit. It hadn't been done since 1996, and we redid it. I wish that we would have taken, again, I was in the legislature back in 1996, but taken some of the recommendations back that the first audit did in 96 and actually implemented some of them. Back 2 years ago, we wouldn't have been in such a problem with our transportation budget that we have been, if we would have done a couple of those changes. So the audit really went through and didn't come up with any really big silver, like this is gonna fix our road issue. But it did come up with a number of different management things, and we passed three bills relating to that. So that audit yielded legislation to try to make it more transparent, more efficient, and making sure that our taxpayers know where projects and how we're spending our money are in the transportation budget. Some of the things that have changed, you know, people forget that back we don't have indexing of the gas tax. So there is a big discussion right now is how to fund our roads. So we have a gas tax in Wisconsin. Now we're not like Illinois where they have a gas tax, a sales tax, tolls, and now they're talking about vehicle miles traveled. So when you look at Illinois and you talk to the friends south of the border, which since my district is right here, do get a lot of people to tell me different things about Illinois. You forget that, they have a gas tax that's lower than Wisconsin, but then they also add a sales tax on top of the gas tax.
Each community has
so that's where they generate more revenue. And then on top of that, then you go down, you know, their interstate system and you throw in $3 for their tolls, you know, for one toll.
Wish it was for that cheap.
Well,
$3.80 for the first one.
Unless you have a little transponder.
Yeah, then it's only like $1.80 or something.
So
you have payment in advance. And then,
Exactly. So it is, you know, it is one of those conversations we're having in Madison right now. I don't know to compare Illinois to Wisconsin. Wisconsin now has a lockbox. It's the one segregated fund outside of the common school fund. So if you get a ticket right now in Wisconsin, you know, and you have to pay that $150 ticket for speeding, that goes into the common school fund. That goes to fund our school libraries. That is a segregated fund, constitutionally protected. A few years ago, we actually did the same thing for our DOT. So now, constitutionally, we can't take money out of our transportation fund. It is protected. So if the money goes in from gas tax, or say that we had the discussion in Madison to do tolling or vehicle miles travel, or you know, 5 cent increase on the gas tax. Those are the three big things that people are really talking about. They might talk a little bit about car registration, but it won't generate the money that the other items will. That money will be actually constitutionally protected. We can't take it out and use it for, you know, other projects. It has to actually go for roads and infrastructure, bridges and things that, you know, keep our road system going. So I think the DOT audit yielded a lot of, you know, what we were doing good, and it gave us a pathway to know and figure out going forward how we can make sure. Just on a sidebar down here, we're going to be touring the roads this week, and what the DOT is putting forward with the interstate and the development roads for Foxconn, it's 37 new road miles. Now, I drive these days about 1 to 2 times a week in Madison, and I've been driving I-90 for 18 years, but in the last 3 years, they have been under construction. So I take highway, I take the little side roads across on the county road, get up on 90, and for the last 3 years, summers, I have faced construction barrels going, and we're still not done yet. But what they're gonna do on the interstate here, and I know people who drive I-94 every day have communicated with me, it is challenging. But luckily, it's going to be 2 construction cycles. So it's this year and next year. So that is something that is much different than I've been dealing with for my many mile trip to Madison. I'm 74 miles to Madison. So I am excited that, and what I've been told, now again, I will confirm this up this week, that we're down to 2 lanes right now in each direction. But when they reopen it up this fall, it'll be 3 lanes, and it will always be 3 lanes for the next. So that does, you know, it will minimize the impact, and then going forward, once the whole interstate is back open in the second year of the construction. So I really do admire the DOT. If we would do all road projects like that, it's very cumbersome. It's frustrating to the constituents, because I know that Highway A right now, I've talked to one landowner several times. They've been out there with the mosquitoes. We've been counting mosquitoes, but also counting gravel trucks going by his house. I know Clement at the county has been working very diligently and the DOT will do it as soon as we get the resolution from you guys to lower the speed limit on Highway A so that he can feel safer getting out of his driveway. Not that it'll it'll just take them down a notch. So I know that Clement, and I've chatted with him on this, I actually called him today just to see where he was at, because I talked to the constituent this weekend again, that, again, those are partnerships. I've already made the, you know, talked to the DOT, to Brett Wallace over there about lowering the speed limit, and those are things that really impact people, you know? He's like, Sam, I understand that this was coming, I knew it, but now, you know, can you just help me out, get the speed limit slower a little bit? And he offered the sheriff to have a deputy sit in the driveway.
Is it because County A was taken over by the state?
Right, it's because it's the detour. It is the detour route. So, and I should say County A east of the interstate, not west. County Highway A west does not have, is not allowing, I think, Foxconn Road trucks drive on it. County Highway D as well is in that same boat. So there should not be any Foxconn trucks, gravel trucks. So again, I'm wearing my dual hats here. So that was a good audit. Some of the other audits that we worked on were the King Nursing Home up in the central part of the state. Again, we have Southern Center down here. We didn't really look at Southern Center, even though they did do a little brush over it when the audit committee, or when the audit bureau went in there. There were some definitely challenges. We had the secretary before us. He's gonna come back in a couple months and report to us where he's at. The care has been good. It's hard, the staffing issues. And I think all care facilities these days, when it comes to nursing facilities, are, you know, it is just very, very challenging. We're all fighting for the same employees and good employees that, you know, and then that forced overtime issue. So again, several conversations that are ongoing and trying to make things better for those employees, giving them options. I think childcare was one, and just things that, again, we never really had to look at, but we do have to be more diverse. We also did an audit on State Fair Park, and I just didn't think this was going to be that exciting, but they do a lot of things, and they had done some things in the past. I mean, they go back 10, 12 years, they were in the red. They have gotten themselves out of that hole because of the Milwaukee Mile and the Pettit Center and the Expo Center. So they're doing significantly better, but had some challenges with the Midway and some of their vendors. You know, I spent a lot of time at our little Kenosha County Fair here, and Denise Zerbo, I don't know if you took the opportunity, I know a few of you guys came out for the fair, but Denise has done a fantastic job bringing the fair into like the 21st century. She has brought, you can pay with a credit card and all those kinds of things. Well, but she could also tell you, so say you have a vendor, she could pull up the contract and actually tell you how much the vendor's paying and everything. And we had some challenges with that up at the state fair. Like, there wasn't the good accounting that should have been done. They couldn't give you all the different vendors. Again, it's much larger scale than little Kenosha County Fair. But I tried to use what I know down here and how things should be running up there, and it really wasn't, you know, meshing. So we are sending a follow-up letter to the, now that the fair's done this year, let's make sure that they've made their improvements and kind of have them back before us again. So then the other one that kind of relates to our area is UW. We did one, the UW relationship audit, and it was specific regarding the foundations. Obviously, UW Oshkosh had some challenges, and there's a criminal investigation pending up there. But and when we went in and audited the foundations, they didn't actually go into UW Oshkosh because of the criminal investigation. They were looking at the other universities and the foundations to make sure that the money and the relationship was, there was a few of the universities, not UW, I have to say, not UW Parkside. Chancellor Gord has done a fantastic job. There wasn't any question down there, but there were some that needed to set up better policies in place. And then the other big foundation, the Wharf, out of UW-Madison, was not impacted at all. That is a completely separate foundation. There is no state dollars that go into Wharf at UW-Madison. It's all privately funded, and the research they do is all separate from the state of Wisconsin. Some of the things that are pending, two big ones. There's a double WEDC audit that's going to be done. That is pretty much, there's an audit done of them every year, and that will be available in spring of 2019. And then the other one we approved as a committee. So the WEDC audit is in statute that we do that audit based on when they were set up versus, you know, when it was just economic, the old Department of Commerce. And as it changed into MEDIC, now there is an audit done of it every year. The other big one that the legislature, or that the committee approved, was the one on corrections cost. This is another big area of, when you look at our state budget. Now, I don't know if everybody, I emailed stuff, emailed graphs today on the state budget. State budget is $75 billion. These are some of my...
When you're talking corrections, is it adult corrections or adult and juvenile?
No, this is just separate to adult correction facilities.
Okay.
The juvenile side was, I believe, completely separate, just because there were several other things going on that, but just correctional costs.
Okay.
But I brought the graphs. When you look at the graph of where the $75 billion budget is, and I, for those, I'll date myself a little bit. My first budget that, when I first worked in the legislature in 1995, as a staffer, our state budget was $32 billion. So it's significantly grown in that span.
Raised it 100%?
Yeah. It's over 100%. Over 100%.
What was it, sir? $32 billion when?
$32 billion. My first,
18 years ago.
18, yeah.
No, that's 95. That's 23 years ago.
Yeah, no, that's my first, when I first started as a staffer. 1996 is when I actually got my first paycheck. I interned during the Brewer Stadium debate in 1995. That's when Cloyd Porter and Senator Joe Andrea were our state senator and state representatives. So the corrections cost in this graph, if you were to look into it, is under the human relations side. So if you're looking for a specific line item on corrections, it's under human relations and resources. And education. So the percentages are about the same. They haven't really changed over the years, but obviously the amount of money in those each year have gone up significantly. So when you look at, the $75 billion one, this is all revenue coming into the state of Wisconsin. That includes GPR, which is general purpose revenue. So that's money that comes from income and sales tax. I call it gold because it can be spent and used anywhere. There's no strings attached to that, those pots of money. Like the federal government would give us when they give us money.
Like a block grant or something.
Block grant or CBD grants and such. So this though includes all of that. That $75 billion includes, all funds, so GPR, segregated, and federal funding coming into the state. And then the other graph is just, this one is general purpose revenue, so the $34 billion. So that's a little bit of an overview of the state budget and where we're at and a little bit what I'm working on. Again, I just wanted to say I do appreciate the conversation, even when we don't agree on issues. I think it's important to have a constructive dialogue. And if there's something that's impacting your area, even if you don't live in my district, I'm open to conversations and discussions. So if I knew, I felt like I talked for half an hour. So.
You did.
25, really well. What's the latest on the juvenile?
So
there's been meetings on that.
There have been several meetings. Now, Van is more of an expert on that because he served on the special committee to help form it. But it is taking the concept of what we had here down in Racine County called the ACE program and duplicating it around the state. Our judges in Kenosha County, I believe, were trying to not use Lincoln Hills or use it as least as possible. So I don't know, from your perspective, I don't know if anybody from Human Services would know if there's, if you guys had anybody up at Lincoln Hills. Even in the last few, I highly doubt it because I think you guys were trying to mitigate and keep the juveniles closer to home. Recidivism rate is better, because they can see their families and those types of things. So I truly believe you were already utilizing this model by keeping the kids with the ACE program out of Racine. So it's taking that concept and duplicating it around the state and having a collaboration of counties working together. So again, cuts down on the transportation costs and, again, the kids can stay closer to home. Seeing their family is important. When you're trying to rehabilitate a child who's done something wrong, you want them to be closer to home. Obviously, though, some of those kids might not, if they've done something like a murder, you know, their sentence might be more significant and move through the system. And that's, you know, those were some of the kids that we came after, some of the ones that unfortunately committed crimes that would impact the rest of their lives.
Sure, I just had a question. Oh.
Can you tell me who you are, so I know where you're, like, what school you're with?
She looks just like her mom.
I'm Kate Bogdala. I go to Indian Trail.
Okay.
Wonderful. Hi, Kate. I was wondering, when will you be bringing the dark store legislation to the floor for a vote?
Same question.
Oh, sure. No, well, and I actually appreciate, Supervisor Jill Gilmore, who's no longer on the board, but she was actually one of the local legislators, or county board supervisors, had contacted me about this issue 2 years ago. I actually brought a whole bunch of assessments. I don't know how much you want me to go into details about dark stores or tax assessment, because this is something that obviously on the Ways and Means Committee, we heard the bill last year on June 29th, I believe, 2017. So it is a challenging issue because, I'll give you one example. So the Walmart store on 52nd Street. There's been a lot of talk about that particular store. Does anybody here know how much it was assessed for? I'll give you one hint. It's 113,000 square feet. So you can drive by, because it's not, it just sold. And it was in the paper. It was on the front page of the paper.
I want to say it was like 800,000 or something, wasn't it? 1.5 or something?
What was it assessed at? Does anybody know what his assessment was? Right. No, I know what it is because I have the assessments all in my bag. Because I have the assessments for all the larger retail stores in Kenosha County that I've looked at. So it was assessed at $2.3 million. Okay. Does anybody know what it sold for?
You're probably
1.1. Yeah, $1.1 million. Now, I did talk to a different assessor, not in Kenosha County or the city of Kenosha, about it. Somebody said it did need a new roof. So there you have an actual now sale of what I would consider a vacant building. So it's not as simple as passing. And I will say I do support the bill. Okay. And right now there's a special committee, just like that worked on foster care, that's working on this particular issue because it is an important issue. So there you have an actual building. You have an assessment, and the sale was less than the assessment by $1.2 million, right? So was it assessed right? That's the question. So, yes.
The problem with that is you don't know what the conditions of the sale were.
Right, and I
you don't know, because again, Walgreens don't really own their buildings.
But that's developers a different issue. That's a different issue than dark store.
I know that. So that they could have some financial issues and are willing now to let it go
Sure. Under
a distressed sale. So you have to find Sure. Out the specifics on that.
So I do know who I've heard. Now, again, I haven't been able to verify this, but I believe U-Haul bought it and is going to put it into storage facilities.
There's been lights in there, a lot of nights.
One other thing.
Okay, so, yeah.
Yeah, I've actually spoken to the management of U-Haul over there. I went to visit them.
Sure.
I completely support them in that move because that's my district. And
sure.
The fact that building has been empty for so long, I really hope the city approves certain things. We'll get on that topic in another day. But
well, please elaborate. I mean, I heard it just through the grapevine, so that you've been able to confirm what I had heard is wonderful, because now I actually have a true sale and I know for sure that U-Haul bought it. So, and it's keeping a similar use but different use, right? Because it was retail before,
right?
And now it's going to be storage and some retail.
I don't know the great extent of the detail.
Sure.
But having them in there is already a benefit, because now that facility can't be used for the comparison for Walmart in the future, and I wish they would have done that
Sure. Years
ago.
Sure.
Now my question to that is, can we reassess Walmart now that this is purchased?
Well,
you
would reassess them now.
Well,
I'm not sure, because now it's got a true sale. And the sale is actually less than what it was assessed at.
Right, but is it a similar business?
But that doesn't. It's not the business. It's the building.
It's the building. It's always
so
going to be the structure.
It's because it's not your house. You know, it's all similar. Just like it's a very, very complicated issue. It's not simple, and that's why, you know, I look at the definition between vacant and abandoned. Okay, I had two houses in 2007 for over a year and a half. One was vacant, but I didn't want, gosh darn, I didn't want the assessment to go down in that house, right? I wanted to stay up. It took us a little while to sell that house during the crash of the housing market. So I considered that house vacant, but not abandoned, right? Look at the dog track. So I went back and I compared. It took me a long time to actually find the assessments of the dog track. I actually had called the assessor and spent 45 minutes on the phone with them because I couldn't find the assessments for the dog track because the parcel numbers had changed. So the dog track, if you go back and look at 2012 and a little bit before, was about $17 million. Lo and behold, when things started to heat up with the dog track, the assessment went up to $35 million, right? But what did the dog track just sell for? $17 million. So I spent a long time on the phone with the Kenosha assessor because I wanted to know. Now, I look at that building. The building has deteriorated greatly. Mm-hmm. It's abandoned.
It's sitting there for over 10 years.
Right. Now abandoned. It's abandoned. Yeah,
that has a lot to do with the loss in value.
Right, but they had actually, you know, in those 2012, 13, 14 years, they 2012, 13, 14, they actually had improved, and that site didn't look abandoned, right? The building structure looked, and they were going to utilize that structure, right? And now it looks abandoned. So I actually had this idea to try to look at what's the difference between vacant and abandoned. Because again, and then why did the assessor go from $17 million to $35 million down to $17 million? That's a significant change. So, you know, these are the things that we as legislators, I look at every. So do you know how much Menards is assessed at?
$3 million?
No, much higher. 10.7. Similar to Target down the street.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now Target had gotten assessed at the $13 million, but then and I think the Village was coming in lower than that, but they compromised at 10.3 or so. I mean, between one of them's 10.3, 10.7. The Menards actually pays more in taxes than Target because the city assessed, you know, tax rate is higher. So Target actually paid $215,000 worth of taxes or $245,000 worth of taxes. Now you're right, the Village of Pleasant Prairie did have to pay back a portion of that tax because they had assessed them at the $13 million, but Target went to court. So, but when you look at these different assessments and actually do the research and like, okay, why was the dog track at $35 million? Nobody still can tell me. It was at $35 million. So, but now we have a true sale at 17. So, and a building that's probably going to be torn down. So again, there's a lot of discussion going on right now. I just talked to Rocco Vito, who's the village assessor from Pleasant Prairie, on Monday. He is actually on the special committee, and they're talking about many, many different issues. We're talking about countywide assessing, which we used to have here in Kenosha County. We were one of the few counties in the state that actually had countywide. I think there might have been two. So. But Rocco and those guys are talking about countywide assessing. So there's a lot of issues going on, and I want to do it right, because whatever bill that comes before us will go to court, right?
That was my next question.
So yeah, if we pass something, even if we pass the current bill like it, as it is, as Representative Rob Brooks and Representative or Senator Roth, who are my colleagues on my side of the aisle, they're Republicans. So sometimes you don't get the bill right away. And actually, let's go back. The Democrats actually put this in their budget back in the 2009 budget, but Governor Doyle vetoed it. So there's been people on the other side of the aisle who've not liked the bill either. And nobody, you know, challenged Governor Doyle. And then the bill wasn't heard about for a few years, and then Representative Brooks and Senator Roth brought the bills forward. So, I mean, it's a long, you know, but it's having that good discussion about what is something assessed at. Because I, at one time, had two houses. And I didn't want my value on my house to go down. Most people want their value on their house to stay high. And I know one thing that people are talking about right now, regardless of this bill, just regardless, is that in our area, because of the prices of land going up, and it's not all the sales, it could be just one sale. I mean, there was about an acre lot near Uline that sold for $1 million.
Yeah.
Because that person could get that, because a particular business needed a road. So.
Anything else?
Are there any states that we can look to that have had success?
Well, but every state does it differently.
I understand that.
And so our state's constitution looks at our...
I understand that.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, are there anything to look at?
Well, we have. I mean, Roger and Rob have both looked at other states. We looked at Michigan, because that was one of the states that we looked to. But again, whatever we do is going to be challenged in court.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I understand. But so if there's precedence...
The worst, you know...
They're actually, because my family has businesses in Indiana. There's been something that was passed 2 years ago there, dealing with dark stores, mm-hmm. because we had convenience stores and other things down there, and we would be able to. It's all settled now, so there is an example of a state that's gone through the court already.
Yeah, right.
So. Sorry.
So, but they would still go to court here.
I know. I was just saying.
I mean, the Indiana courts, remember, are different than our courts, and our constitution is different than Indiana's constitution.
But you can always learn.
Right. It's just like, you know, folks always bring up to me down in Illinois, you know, when you turn 65, you can do kind of, you know, defer on your taxes. And, you know, we can't do that here.
No.
So.
Anybody else?
Hello.
Hey, Jeff. How are you?
First of all, I'd like you to kind of answer her question
sure.
a little bit. With,
sure. I said
about
I said
what is the time frame? I mean, I know you've got a committee going.
Sure.
Are you looking at having something come out at the beginning of the year and moving?
Well, I'm not on the special committee, and like I said, I stopped by and I talked to Rocco, who is actually a local assessor who's on the committee with the legislators on it. Now, I asked to be on the committee this cycle, and I was not chosen. Again, not everybody gets to be on the committees that you want. And I thought because of my tax policy, me on Ways Mean would make me more. But you can't have me on there and then Rocco on there as well. So I get it. I'd rather have Rocco's experience of being in this.
Are they looking to get that wrapped up at the beginning of the year?
They usually do, around January, February. And again, just, you know, there's definitely a lot of challenges. It's not a simple thing. Just like I said, you know, I came up with the conversation of, you know, in our Walmart, and I did go and talk to Representative Brooks. As soon as Walmart was in the paper and sold at $1.1 million, I said, now you have a sale. Now it's $1.2 million less than it was assessed at, so you're not helping the cause here.
So going to one of my issues is mental health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
we did several. That's a really...
Right,
you know,
and I mean, I know you touched on juvenile, and I...
Well, it's more than that.
Oh, it's way more than that. And I know that the last person you guys had in front of you, I talked to about this as well, and we're looking at some consortiums with different areas, and I know that on finance, I got two placements that brought it up almost $750,000 with the budget. So, I mean, you know, our placements, both juvenile and adult, and where we take people, and how the courts dish stuff out, and how we do prevention, is all a huge wrapped up issue in this.
Yeah.
And we need the help of the state and the federal legislatures to do this. And I you know, I know you mentioned, you said you're on Children and Family Services.
Which doesn't deal with this. There's actually a whole
I understand, but it was my segue to ask you the question.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I understand that you're only, you know, a piece of that. Our juvenile placements haven't been that bad.
Sure.
It's more of our adult placements,
sure.
But I really am looking to Madison to help us with this mental health issue. And I know it's statewide, I know it's countrywide, and I know that it's a big thing, but I sit on finance and I watch the amount of money that we spend on this.
So you have how many placements right now for the county?
I'm not exactly sure. I just know the last couple that bumped up the human services budget. And, you know, I mean, the first year I was on, I was on human services and finance, and we had two placements that, again, were $650,000. This stuff's not budgeted for.
Right.
You know, we don't plan on that. We can't handle that. So we need help to figure out what we're going
to
do with how these people are housed, how we can work on prevention, how we can work with the court system. It's a huge issue.
Sure. And I first off, hats off to your county human services. You know, John Jansen and the crew down here do a phenomenal job. So there was a special committee that looked at this, and then there's a standing committee, because it, you know, the speaker realized that this is an issue that impacts not only county budgets, but people's lives. Because it's one of those things that, you know, when it touches your family, and it doesn't matter if you're, you know, your income level.
Mental health touches, and it's touching a lot of people's families, no matter what.
Correct. And so, I mean, with that and then the heroin addiction and the opioid addiction, it's like twofold right now imploding on our system. And so there were several different pieces of legislation. Again, I don't serve on that standing committee. Representative Warcast and then Paul Till were our two main legislators that are leading the charge on those bills, or on those committees with those bills. Because it does have, it touches across the lines. But I will say locally, and I just had an encounter this summer with, and I don't know if you guys maybe, because it came through the sheriff's department, not from the sheriff, but from one of his employees who wanted to talk about maybe doing placements outside of the state because it was closer. The only problem, though, it gets to your federal side, Illinois actually has to pass a law, not us, to actually transport, because through the court system you actually have jurisdiction over this, the person.
Illinois would screw it up.
but it sounds like the facility.
I actually disagree with that.
It sounds like the
facility. No, I can tell you why we don't talk.
Okay. Well, again, maybe you know more about it, this facility. I just heard about this at the fair.
I worked in Illinois at mental health for 15 years. Yeah. Illinois does not do much well at all. Mm-hmm. They do their mental health very well.
Same with my wife. She was there for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. That's a partnership we need to look
and
at.
And I would actually highly recommend looking at what Illinois is doing, because
I just heard that I worked in the IMD,
which is an institute for the mentally diseased. And it is state dollars that they receive. But they are now doing a whole new model that is more acute care within these IMDs, and it's three different levels of care. Acute care, which can be up to 48 hours, some that are a couple weeks, and then also long term. It's truly a fabulous concept.
So maybe, and again, this person got me at the fair, so just last month, and then they were going to be sending me some information on it, and I have not received it yet. But if you have any information to be more, because it sounded like from their perspective, it wasn't Wisconsin that needed to change, it was Illinois, because they had done that with Indiana. So Indiana wanted, and they changed the law specifically. Oh, okay, maybe.
I was going to say, it's very early going, but our office is aware there are some very, very preliminary research discussions going on. Apparently there's a facility that's in the process of being built, so they also have an interest in having people there. And you're right, my rudimentary understanding is it would require an Illinois law, but it doesn't sound like that's going to be an insurmountable hurdle, because they have done this in the past.
Yeah.
So I was going to reach out when I got some more information and contact the legislators to the South, because Pam Althoff is the state senator to the South. So again.
Yeah, I mean, I know you're not sitting on the committee, but maybe you could take a note and find this information out. And I would ask the chair of this committee to maybe put this on for November as an agenda item, and have whatever our corporate council has, whatever information you have, whatever information the legislators have.
Well,
I mean, just to move the ball forward, you know, to see what we can.
I'm in that holding pattern, and I just brought it up. Well, and obviously, I will. So Supervisor Retzloff, last year, he had contacted me on this particular issue, mm-hmm. because it was something he felt very passionate about. So Greg and I have had several conversations about it. So this is something, when I got approached at the fair, like, I wanted to run with it, but I was still waiting for information.
Well, I've been talking about mental health and the problems we've had here for probably going on 6 or 7 years.
Yeah. No, and that's okay. But Greg,
you know,
he knew my number.
And then, you know, that we don't know what happens with the study, and then, you know, we still get the placements and we still get the issues. And the way I look at it, it's good. The problem is only going to get bigger and bigger. It's not going down.
So Supervisor Noodle, or how should I work this? So there has been several pieces of legislation to pass. So would you like me to send them to you, and then you can delineate that, like we did today?
Yeah, why
and
don't
then
we do it
any
together?
Information that, you know, others
that
might. Yeah,
because
again, I was kind of in a holding pattern that somebody reached out to me. It sounded like interesting concept, and I said.
I know I talked to Ben about it before too.
Right.
And we're trying to consider something that we could get together.
So maybe
and
we'll
I
have a
the
follow-up.
The other day also about
I'll go at Human Services with the same thing, but from a legislative perspective, I think that's something we need to hear. We're not going to get, we're not going to make, again, move the ball forward without the help of Anderson and figuring that out. And that this is the committee that needs to do that, and they need to know where we're coming from. That's why I come to all these meetings and harp on the same thing over and over and over again. So.
Well, I appreciate that conversation. You know, again.
I'll have it with you anytime. Feel free, I'll sidebar you. And we'll bring her, because now she's got a different perspective.
I know. Yeah. She might even, you know, if we need her to go to Illinois, to Pam Althoff, or I don't know who replaced Jack Franks in McHenry County, but
I can get all
so
that.
So I just want to get a clarification.
Yeah, just a couple minutes.
So resolution. Wisconsin mental health patients can be sent to Illinois.
That
facilities.
Is what I
that's what we're talking about.
Right, but Illinois, sure. Well, under their law, it's, it doesn't sound like they're able to take them.
I know somebody
right.
in Illinois, so I'm going to ask.
Are we close to getting any solutions on the drunk driving issue?
She works on a government. She's not
like, you know, there are several bills, and I can shoot you those as well. You know, I know Representative Ott has led up several. I know that there was one most recently talked about with regards to if you take custody of somebody who is intoxicated and they go out and commit another crime. Obviously, that was the most recent one that I read about.
Right, but I mean, down here, I mean, you could get 6-7 DUIs and still be functioning, and it blows me away.
We've toughened that up significantly. So, again, I to be honest with you, I wouldn't mind going to criminalization of the first offense. Now, I'm one of a few legislators who would actually support that concept. But
even the second's fine, but not the third, fourth,
well,
or fifth.
The second offense is criminalized. The first offense
first
is a civil.
The first one would be better.
The last thing
I'll ask is, okay. Is the city, do you do anything with the formulas for how the city gets their money from the state and federal government, being with the audit and ways and means?
Well, I mean, what particular, I mean the state budget is yeah. So if it is a formula that comes through the state, right? You're talking about shared revenue?
Yeah,
yes.
That's what I'm talking
sure.
about. Because they just got a notification that theirs was getting cut recently by like $250,000.
You're talking about personal property.
Something. And
well, personal property tax is being, right, correct, the city, right. But the state is actually backfilling that.
Right,
so again,
right,
that's what's happening.
Not this year, so they're not getting this
year. Right, they're not getting this year.
They're only going to get a percentage in the future years. They're not going to get the full percentage.
No, we'll sidebar because again, that's
okay. Nice. That's fine because it impacted me on joint services with how much money the city was getting. So their representative said, "Well, we can't afford doing this because of this." So I wondered if you were a piece of any of those formulas.
No. Well, again, we did change the personal property tax, but mm-hmm. again, the state is funding that personal property tax, so there shouldn't be any reduction
okay.
to any. If the city is staying that, they might have gotten a reduction someplace else.
They might
through
have.
Expenditure restraints or something that they're spending money on.
Okay, we're gonna. Wrap this up.
I hope I didn't talk too much. Sorry. Thank you. I thought it was a constructive conversation, though.
It was good. It was very good. And hopefully, we can have you back in the future.
Sounds great.
And we can finish talking about this.
It's fun not to have to compete with my other colleagues, though. So I appreciate that discussion.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Where are we at? Number eight. Ordinance amending NCKC chapter filling of vacancies occurring within a term. Okay, and this year I believe Corporation Council prepared two different resolutions.
This is number nine. This is number 18.
Oh.
This is Supervisor Rogers.
Oh, is that? Yeah. Oh, I thought we were going to go at least with them, but okay. Oh, sorry. Thank you. Okay. This one. Which one is that? What about changing? Well, since it's your resolution, you want to talk about it?
Yes. Hello, fellow or former committee members. Hopefully you guys all got a chance to read it. I know it was crazy long, but I'll read it here for you. We just added one line to the current ordinance. It states, following this presentation, the vote on confirmation shall take place at the next county board meeting. So the bulk of the ordinance stays the same in how we fill vacancies. The reason I asked Corporation Council to draft this ordinance change was to give the constituents and districts or their supervisor, whether it passes away, moves, resigns, for whatever reason, an opportunity to know who the county board chairman or chairwoman is choosing to represent them. Let them have an opportunity to reach out to that individual. Let them have an opportunity to reach out to the other supervisors that will be voting on that individual, whether you're even the chairman or chairwoman. And you look at the way government makes appointments, whether it's the city and the mayor making an appointment, the county executive, to the governor, to the president making appointments. I mean, it's not common that we see something where the person making the appointment says, this is who I'm choosing, now you're voting on it. And I personally think that's wrong. I've talked with other constituents in my district as well who think the people who are getting represented by somebody have, or really should, have a voice in who's getting chosen to represent them until the next special election can be taken place. So that's what this is all about. I'm not, there's no attempt here to get this, you know, to suspend the rules and have this enacted for Supervisor Hallman's seat. This is for the future. This doesn't happen very often. I think we're kind of in a unique predicament right now with Supervisor Retzloff passing away, and then within just a couple of months having another supervisor resign as he moves to a different county. So that's the bulk of this. I don't know if you guys have any questions.
To me, this is, what are you going to do with that 2 weeks? What you can do is, you say get to know the person, and then talk to other supervisors about it. We could also say, well, we can find reasons why this person shouldn't be chosen those 2 weeks, and come up with something. We've had this as far back as I could find, as we've had it. I don't see why we need to change it at all.
Let's go to, if you guys want to take a look at tonight's agenda for our county board meeting. The county executive is making 2 reappointments. Again, I mean, those names are public. That's what this is about. For whatever reason, this county makes every other appointment public, except for when we're filling a vacancy for a supervisor. And to me, if we're doing this for every other, whether it be a health commission or whatever, we make that public, but we don't make it public for somebody who's voting on ordinances, who's voting on a budget. And to me, that's so backwards. That we, one of the most important people, or arguably the most important person a constituent has at their county level, they have no say in it, because unless they're at that meeting, they don't know who's getting chosen. And now if we had some other, I mean, and we can revisit this, but my point is that the people deserve the right to know who's getting selected so they can voice their opinion. Now, if I remember correctly, I don't have it in front of me, I believe we're voting again tonight on Patrice Hall, if that's correct. If something happened between her most recent term and now she's up for reappointment, if, you know, the public has a right, and the county executive seems to agree with that, that let's put her name out there, that people will know who's getting chosen, who I'm appointing, and who the county board will be voting on. And that's what this is about. This isn't about any one supervisor. I mean, like I said, this, from what I've talked to the other supervisors, this doesn't happen often. I had an opportunity to speak with Supervisor Alverman and Supervisor Ron Frederick, who both have made appointments in the past, and they both said they made that their appointment, the person they chose, was made public before the vote. It wasn't that the supervisors were finding out that night of, right before the vote. It wasn't that the public found out. They said, we made it public. So that's what this is about. So now we just have an instance where this is the only appointment at our county level that is not getting published to the public. I mean, we're essentially, if you're not at the meeting, you don't get to know. And I mean, that's tough. I guess you'll have to read about it in the paper the next day. So that's what this is about.
If I'm not mistaken, Supervisor Esposito, Chair Esposito, said that information at the last meeting could have been gathered had you asked him. I'm not mistaken.
Show what happened at the last meeting.
Well, what I'm saying is, I'm simply making the point that it wasn't private information, as far as I know, that the resumes that were sent out were public, but you would have had to have asked him, and he, if I'm not mistaken, at the last meeting, he said he would have been happy to tell you who he was considering. Now, I don't know if he was going to reveal who he chose, but I don't see this as private information. Not to mention the language in the county manual here says appointment, and my understanding of appointment is that it's up to the broad discretion of the chair to decide who he or she wants. It's not up for a vote or even consideration. I mean, ultimately, we do have consideration because we can vote on it. And if you don't like the appointment, you can vote no. And ultimately, when it's a temporary appointment, the public will have a say in April. If the appointment is unacceptable to the constituents of that particular district, then the vote will take place in May or April, and then it'll be a Democratic vote. But in the meantime, it's just a temporary appointment. It's up to the broad discretion of the chair, and it's really not up for a committee or a countywide vote. We can confirm the person or not confirm based upon whether you like the person being appointed or not.
Well, and again, that's not what the issue is here. I mean, you look at tonight's agenda for the whole county board tonight. You have, you know, number 24, Michael Pitts to serve on the County Housing Authority Board. That's the county executive saying, I'm making a choice, mm-hmm. similar to what our chairman did a month ago, give or take, with mm-hmm. Supervisor Retzloff's seat. Here's the person's name. That's what this is about. It isn't about the person. It isn't about the seat. It's here's who I'm choosing so the public knows, so the public has a say. And we just don't put on our agendas appointment to the County Housing Authority, appointment to the County Traffic Safety Commission. We just, ordinance from PDEC. We put on everything that we do at the county level, what's being done, what's being discussed, and that's what this is about. It's not a gotcha on anybody. It's this is what we're talking about, and the public deserves the right to know that. I mean, we pride ourselves on being an open government, and I think we're taking a step in the wrong direction by not having this currently in place.
Two things on what Supervisor Franco brought up. I kind of have to disagree with one. If you don't know who any appointment or who's even in the pool, how can you vote for or against them if you don't know who they are? So to that point. The other point is, you're only looking at the supervisors. What about the constituents? The constituents won't know. You know, the chairman's not going to allow, well, yeah, just call me up, everyone. I'll tell you who it is. And so I think that's the bigger issue here. For us, yes. I mean, we wouldn't. I didn't know Joe Cardinale or anyone else. You know, I think I knew one of them. I heard your name before, but I didn't know it. So the other two, I had no idea who they were. Now, granted, I could have gone forward and asked them, no question about it, and I will on the next one. But to Supervisor Rodriguez's point, I think it's a bigger one of the constituents. They don't know, and no, they don't get the input. That's still us to confirm or not based on our votes. But I think that's the bigger issue than just us.
Joe?
Just to further Supervisor Franco's points, as somebody that just went through this process, my name as well as the other four applicants was in the paper as soon as it was closed, so it was public, and I was contacted by, you know, constituents wishing me luck, asking me for updates and whatnot. So I mean, it's not like it's closed off. So the constituents could theoretically reach out to the chairperson, any county board supervisor, say, hey, this person, good, this person I don't like so much. So I mean, they do have that option already built in. And then like Supervisor Franco said, myself, I face re-election this coming April. There is a mechanism already built in called democracy that allows the voters to have their fair say. So that's mm-hmm. that's all I have to say.
And I've actually been one that went for an appointment and didn't get it back in 1998. And everything was put in front, everything was in the paper, you know.
Was your name in the paper? This is who the chairman at the time was choosing?
I will be honest with you, I do not recall if it was okay. Before.
And that's...
This is 1998. I have trouble remembering last weekend.
Well, and that's this is wholly, and like I mean, this is my first term. For the others on this committee who have been here for a period of time, you guys know that this is not a common occurrence. So that's what this is about. In that every chapter of county government, we make it as public as possible. And for whatever reason, this county board has decided, unless it's filling a vacancy for a county board seat. And I question that. And in regards to Chairman Esposito's remarks of, well, if you would have called and asked, it would have been made public. I was sitting in the phone with, or sitting in the car with somebody who did call the county clerk and say, hey, look, who's getting chosen tonight? And she said, I'm not going to tell you that. You have to be at the meeting tonight. And that is wrong. We government works for the people. The people don't work for the government. And I think it's a shame that we are so secretive in this one aspect, but it puzzles me, and I lead to questions then. Why is it just this, that when we do any other appointments, whether it's the county board chair, the county executive, their name is in the agenda? That's what this is about. It's not about the previous seat. It's not about Supervisor Holloman's seat. For the future, I'm not asking to suspend the rules and get this, you know, railroaded down the tracks. This is for the future, and hopefully, honestly, we don't see another vacancy and for the time to come. So.
I think similar to the discussion we're going to have after this about the changing of the voting for vice chair, one of the arguments is when something happens, we go and we jump over, we want to change it right away. And instead of discussing it and having that long conversation about it, without jumping to make a change right now. And I don't think that time is now to make that change. Had there not been something put through courts the next day or the next week, I don't know if we'd be having the same conversation. And that's why I'm not gonna support it this time. I think it's something that we need to not be jumping on right away. If we wanna talk about it in the future, sure. But as was said in the same discussion about the vice chair voting, it's something that doesn't occur very often, as was said here. So, I mean, do we want to change the rules for something that doesn't happen very often?
And I agree with that point, because when I was sitting on this committee, that was my argument with the vice chair. And I guess the same could be said for the chairman elections, is a reactive government is not a responsible government. I concede that point. But where I'm coming from is when I talked to two former chairmen who said when that decision was mine, I did make that choice public. And now for whatever, and this isn't anything personal against Chairman Esposito. This is his choice, and he's allowed to make that choice based on how the ordinance is written. And that's what this is discussing. And I did talk with other supervisors that night, and I don't recall exactly, but I do believe I did talk with Chairman Esposito too, that said I would be interested in changing this ordinance. And he said, go for it. You know, this is how county government works. If you don't like something, you go to change it. So if this doesn't pass tonight, and I see your guys' points, but I also, you know, I agree with my point, I hope you guys are wholesome in the fact that you will continue to discuss this. But I would encourage you to vote in favor of this, given that as long as anybody can remember on the board, the clerk, anybody, this has not happened before, where that name was not publicized. But it is for every other appointment, and that's what puzzles me.
Well, anybody wants to make a motion?
I move we accept the ordinance.
Motion to accept the vote on the ordinance.
Or vote on the ordinance.
Is that a second?
No, that wasn't a second. I just was saying. No. Motion to vote on the ordinance.
Right. Correct. Is that a second? A motion? Is there anybody? Is there a second? Okay.
So I guess through the chair then to Corp Council, what happens to this? I mean, if they're not going to vote on it, just...
I believe it can be brought up again, correct?
I mean, is this essentially tabled then to the next meeting? Because I'll tell the other supervisors on this committee, I mean, if you guys are going to kill it tonight, go ahead and kill it, but I'd like to have a vote.
Well, I mean, if there is no second, the motion dies for lack of a second. And it's,
So, but what happens to the motion, or the ordinance change?
I mean, I would argue resolution. It's dead. I mean, it could be reintroduced at some point, but it would die for lack of a second.
It could be reintroduced.
It wouldn't be tabled. It would not automatically come back in the next meeting.
It would have to be after
the ask for it to be in the next meeting.
After the budget. Done,
at any time.
And it can be reintroduced.
In a specific
because
time.
Because every close in die.
Now and then.
And then
hold on,
December.
Hold on. Joe? Can it be brought up at any time, or do we have to wait?
Would it be like the thing Supervisor Blau did last time. After we close SINDAI, then it can be brought up again.
While I'd want to look at it, that would be my inclination. Generally speaking, a matter that is dead in one session is dead until the start of the new session. So yes, I would be inclined to say after we adjourn SINDAI and start the next meeting in November, it would be in order. But if it died here for lack of a second, there may be a different approach I'd have to look. But my inclination would be to say it would probably be off the table until we adjourn SINDAI and start up again.
So I would ask then, you guys are your own committee, I can't tell you what to do. So this can be clear cut. I would ask one of those sitting on this committee who does not support this to make a motion to deny it so we can have a vote on it tonight.
It could also be seconded by someone who's intending to vote against it simply to have it in front of the committee.
Exactly.
Or it could be tabled too.
Or it could be tabled if somebody wants to put it on for the October
table,
or
and then it could be
or in like that next month.
So basically we have to bring it up again.
Yeah, right now we're in limbo. If no one does anything else, it will die for lack of a second.
Okay. And I think we bring it, you know, for right now to bring it back for discussion now. Can we discuss it again tonight?
This no? evening?
Yeah.
You mean
just for somebody else to say to table it or to second to change their mind or
sure, right about? Now right now there's a motion approved that has no second.
Okay.
So that motion is dead unless someone makes a motion to second. Someone could move to
table or
to table it to another date or
okay.
For discussion. That.
Okay. Basically, I think what he's saying, right? There's no second, so the motion is dead, and another motion could be made.
Correct, yes.
Another motion could be made.
So you could move to have it...
To table, to reconsider the motion.
But you're saying you could move to have it not accepted, correct? Vote against it.
Well, you can move it to second, that would have died.
And then it will die, or you can move it to table to the next meeting. Yeah.
My guess is it's not going to get any seconds.
Well, what
so I'll move the table to the next meeting.
Okay. So we'll move the table to the next meeting instead of second. Let me ask you a question. Can I second the motion as a chair? No.
Not
going to
happen.
The table.
You
can make
the motion.
You can, Joe. I've seen
Rose do it. I believe you can.
Yeah, I've seen Rose do it.
Okay, I'll second the motion.
So is there...
Are you seconding the first motion?
No.
Or
I would,
okay.
I mean, is there discussion on this?
Because
I would ask the chair to second the motion to approve or deny it, just so we can get a clear-cut answer tonight. Even if that means denying the resolution in front of you.
Let's go with the
but through the chair to corp counsel, that this motion to table it fails, which I'm assuming it will, we're still back in the same situation. So that's why I'm asking the chair and the committee to, I mean,
well,
if somebody...
Well, then there's no motion, then it just completely...
But then we're back in the same limbo question of...
And then it just dies, that's it.
But the question then is, do I bring it back next
and
month?
Then it's dead. Then it's dead.
I will give you an answer. What I'm telling you is I think would be dead until November
3rd. Well, so in that would give them a chance to look into it.
You know, can I,
so,
because we're not going to get a clear-cut answer, can I withdraw this resolution? Since I'm the sponsor of it? Because if I take my name off of this, it has no sponsor, and then therefore it would die. So then I want to take my name off of this, and then there's no sponsor, it dies. Because I don't want the limbo question. I really just want a yes or no.
I think you could withdraw it. I don't think it's not withdrawing your name. I think you could simply ask that it not be considered, and then it
Okay, I'm gonna do that then. So to the chair, I'm gonna withdraw this resolution since I can't get a yes or no answer on this. Even though we have an outstanding number of people on this committee who are very vocal to say, no, this isn't a good thing, but they're not willing to put their name behind it, which I think is a shame.
You don't want to that will.
We're going to be in the same instance of nothing's going to happen. I mean, I was raised in a way that if you believe in something, you put your name behind it, but apparently members on this committee weren't raised the same way, so... But to each their own.
Get out of order now.
To each their own. So, to the chair then, am I... Are we good?
No.
If you withdraw it, then I think...
Yeah. Even though there's a motion on the floor now, it's a motion second.
I think he can withdraw.
Withdraw the motion.
Okay. Okay, let's go to the next one.
Do we really, because this may last more than 14 minutes.
Well, then I can
move
this one
for
the next meeting again.
Oh, come on.
I know.
Jesus, I Walker, come on. This is a good decision.
Well,
it's a simple cut and dry thing.
I just looked at the clock and it's like 14
okay.
minutes to
let's go on the next
time.
One. Which one is it?
Number nine,
which is
either A or B.
Okay. Without really, okay. We have been discussing on this for a long time. So which now two of them have been brought up, A or B. I think we should just take one of those and vote on it.
I'll make a motion to support Supervisor Gentz's.
Which one?
I'm not sure.
Kansas is the second one in the packet. That would be D. It provides for lack of a better term, an immediate primary. Only two people move on, no matter
okay.
how many candidates there are.
Okay. Is that a motion? I believe there is a motion by Boyd. Is that a second?
Second.
Okay. Any discussion?
Just really
two.
Quickly. They're very close.
Yes.
One just eliminates the last one, and the second one is the top two. What is the effective difference, ultimately?
There would be no difference unless we had more than three people running.
So it virtually doesn't matter which one. It's
mm-hmm. Well,
it depends if you have four people.
It would be
okay.
If two and three vote getters
let's
tie,
say we have four.
Two
then.
And three would go on a runoff, and then the winner of that would go up against number one.
If
four would automatically
right.
drop
if,
off.
If there are four candidates running under one proposal, the top two vote getters move on. Under the other proposal, the top three vote getters move on.
Okay. So, all right. So I got it. Okay.
I mean, I'll take one second. Go ahead. I did not mean for you guys to put this much thought into this. I swear to God, I did not. It, to me, I could have kept that vote going for hours, and it would have been idiotic. Okay, so
agreed.
All I'm saying is,
agreed.
You know, let's be proactive and just say the top two move on and go on with that. I mean, it's
okay.
really, to me, that's what all three of the people that were in it thought would happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I was the last one, so let's just, I mean, come on. To me, the top two should move on, and you should not have that going. I could have kept going and going and going. Got everybody really angry, and my people weren't going to cave. So it would have went on all night, and it's just ridiculous. So that's why I did it, just to eliminate that, you know, to make it very simple. Sorry, I didn't mean to.
No. Well, actually, that's the one.
All right. Is there a motion on the floor?
Yeah. Okay,
yeah,
there
was
a motion.
And you seconded?
Second.
No,
okay.
Other way around. But.
Other way.
Okay.
Any discussion?
I recognize I'm not a member of the committee. I would be remiss if I didn't once more say clearly the board has the ability to make its own rules. I do not think this is necessary. I think it goes directly against the advice of Robert's rules, which is that you should not drop off the lowest vote getter. Elections can be messy. Democracy can be messy and time-consuming. The theory in Roberts is that the last place vote getter may wind up at some point being a consensus candidate if there's no movement on the top two. I don't know whether that would have happened this year or not, but that's not the point.
And as was indicated before, I just also need to say I get concerned when we make our rules in a reactive fashion. If we have a situation coming up where we know we've got three people running, as I've said before, we certainly would have the capability at the beginning of that meeting to suspend the rules and set the rules for that election without having to carve into our rules of this is what we're going to do. Now, again, that's just my advice. You clearly have the ability to do whatever you want to, and I understand the motivation from Supervisor Getz in making the suggestion.
Chair?
Okay.
My only concern with that is how much discussion could go on how we're going to do it. Look how 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 did it, you know? It could take a while to get to the point of how we're going to do it.
Well, you're going to get a political backbiting thing where you take a recess and you go and argue with each other. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Anyway, I understand.
Okay.
What do you do?
Any other discussion?
Could you get some place to go?
All those in favor?
Aye.
Yes.
Oh. Oh, sorry.
Aye. Okay. Committee? All those in favor?
Yeah. Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Passes. Next one.
All right.
It's other matters.
We have nothing. Our next meeting is, I believe, the 16th of October, which is the budget.
16th.
Okay.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Motion to adjourn by Andy, second by Joe.
All
those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Most of them. Now.